Okay, we resume our meeting. We're going to talk about derecognition and recognition to paper 10D. Peter.
Okay, so in 10D, as in the others, we're highlighting what we've changed. And I'd like to pick out one main thing and one small thing. I'll maybe start with the small thing, which is in paragraphs 38 to 41, added some discussion of some alternatives to the possible approach we've got on derecognition. The main thing I wanted to highlight is in recognition and the discussion last time round. One of the recognition criteria we had in was talking about faithful representation. And we set that up as a possible second criterion. And we've added some discussion in the paper really saying that we don't think we need a second criterion for that, and it is already covered by the relevance criterion. So you might want to look at agenda paper 10D, actually, is probably the place where that's summarised. So I think the main conclusion we came to really is that in all the cases when you thought you might not be able to give a faithful representation, you would actually conclude in any case that the information wouldn't be relevant. And so that there would be no need for another criterion that was based on faithful representation as well. The other aspect of that I wanted to highlight is mentioned in point C, really C2, C3 of Agenda Paper 10D, which is that looking again at what the existing framework says about reliability as the recognition criterion. One thing it talks about is whether users can depend on the information to give a faithful representation. And what we thought would be useful, and we've added it's in paragraph 9A of Agenda Paper 10DE, is the notion that users would be able to depend on or rely on the information. And we deliberately use both words there, depend on and rely on, for two reasons. The depend on word was in the previous framework, and it seemed quite useful to build that link in. And then also we thought it'd be useful to use the rely word also to build that link to the previous buzzword of reliability. So perhaps I could pause there and see whether people have any comments on our suggestion that we don't need the second criterion about faithful representation, and also whether you how you feel about the words we've built in about being able to depend on or rely on the information.
Mary?
A general question, no disagreement with the paper itself, but on the separate criterion for faithful representation, to me that implicitly sets up relevance as the super criterion, because what you're saying is there are times when it could be represent faithfully, and maybe this is Ron's point about you could faithfully represent the cost, but you might decide cost isn't relevant. There are times you can represent faithfully, but it might not be relevant. But there's no time when it can be relevant if it's not a faithful representation. So you're saying of the two primary characteristics, relevance always requires faithful representation, so it's kind of the super criterion or characteristic.
Ron can maybe chip in here as well, because he was mentioning this during the last meeting, but I think in a way the conclusion we came to is you look for relevance. Once you've figured out something that's relevant, then you work out the best way to represent it faithfully. And it's unlikely you'll be able to come up with a case where you think something's relevant, but you wouldn't be able to give a faithful representation at all. Did I get that right, Ron?
Well, I would have described it a little bit. You're not wrong. I would describe it a little bit differently, though. Let's say you've decided that the most relevant thing to talk fair value terms is a quoted market price. Well, you don't have one, so you can't faithfully represent that. It's impossible. You can have an estimate, and you could faithfully represent that, and it might be very relevant, but it might also be a wild guess, and therefore somewhat less relevant. But whatever you do, you have to faithfully represent. It's got to be what it says it is. If it's not that, then you're just going to mislead people. And there are some things that are what you say they are, and they're very relevant, and there are others that aren't. As Jim Lazarin's example is, I can faithfully represent the shoe size of the CEO, but it's totally irrelevant.
It seemed to be a lesson we were learning in working through this, that if it was a lesson to us, then it might be.
It certainly may be. This is how we used to argue about, should it be, what if it's reliable, should it be reliable or relevant? What's the trade-off? And we tried to reword it in such a way that there really isn't a trade-off. You've got to faithfully represent whatever number you're talking about. Then you decide if it's relevant, or really Peter says you'd like to go the other way. You figure out what you'd like to have, what would be relevant, and see if that is possible, a faithful representation.
It just seems that this is an insight into one of the chapters we have already finished, and it's an insight we've gained in this process, and maybe we have to think about capturing that.
I think it is actually in there, in fact, although we've realized it a bit more.
It may not be as in the face as it could have been. And we do actually, even in the framework we wrote, there's a section in the basis that kind of misuses the word faithful representation. I wish we'd noticed it earlier. But.
Okay. Ron, I use one example to test whether I understand you just said. There is one issue controversial, you know, like PK and I would say that we should keep cost exemption. Let us say no, you know, because equity instruments, investment, the most relevant measure is fair value. Mm-hmm. And those who will say no, benefit for two reasons. One is reliability, another one is the cost. And you just said, you know, first, fair value is most relevant. And secondly, as to faithful representation, you should tell others, even though there's no precise number, you should tell people how you arrived at that number. And even the variance is so wide, just tell people, and then the information is useful.
No, I didn't say that. I said it's a faithful representation at that point.
Yes.
Whether or not it's useful is a second decision.
Oh, okay.
Just saying something is fair value is really usually not enough, because then I don't know whether it was a quoted market price or it was one of these things where you had to make a lot of guesses and use your own internal estimates. You have to tell me that first.
Yeah.
And then I decide. It's not automatically relevant just because it's what I said it was. Then I may decide that. And Bob Hurst used to use the 30-year Thai baht swap as his example. I don't know what else you do, okay, but there's no forward curve that went 30 years for Thai bahts. And so anything you said as its value was a wild guess. And how important, how useful is that number? The fact that the swap exists is useful. The cost probably isn't very useful. So what do you do? I mean, I understand you got a problem there, but just because you told me it was a wild guess doesn't mean I'm going to want to use that number, even though you told me the truth.
Okay, thank you.
Question. Under that example, would this approach argue for not recognizing the asset?
It wouldn't argue one way or the other. It would, I think it's hard to argue not to recognize. But if you can't find a number to put on it, I don't know how you do recognize it.
Well, the reason I say is because in the second bullet we say the ISB might decide, agreed, it might, in a project to develop or revise a particular standard, that an entity need not or should not recognize an asset if recognizing the asset would provide users with information that is not relevant, in light of the fact that we're incorporating faithful representation now into this notion of relevance,
as well as
dependence.
I really wonder if it's wise. Because in usual normal language, you do not include faithful representation
right.
as a component of relevance.
And it's not intended to be.
And it's obvious that to many publicly traded companies, intangibles are extremely relevant.
Sure.
Except we have no idea how to measure them. And that's why we do not include them. And to say then that information on these intangibles is not relevant, I would not say that. I mean, it is truly because we cannot measure it.
You're right.
There is no way to come to faithful representation.
Well, no, you can come to a faithful representation of a wild guess.
Yeah.
But you can't come to a faithful representation of a
value.
Pretty precise value. Absolutely not.
But I don't think it is wise to take the relevancy, to take the faithful representation out of the definition. It will lead to too much confusion.
Okay, I think you and I are on the same page here. I just want to make sure I understand.
Are we going to say to people intangibles are not relevant?
No,
we wouldn't be saying intangibles are not relevant. What we'd be saying is that you might conclude that, for example, some internally generated intangibles, a number about them isn't sufficiently relevant that you think you should recognize.
You can't come up with a number that's sufficiently relevant. Yeah.
But what is against including the reference to faithful representation? If it's such an important part of coming to the conclusion that the information that you could gather is not relevant.
You can include it. It needs to be worded a little differently. In other words, you don't need to just replace reliable with faithful representation. I think you, in your framework and in the FASB's, we used reliable there to mean a different thing than we used it in the qualitative characteristics. We used it to mean some sort of precision. And that's not what faithful representation means. So we may need to keep faithful representation, but it doesn't need to just replace the word reliability. There's more that needs to be discussed if we're going to do it.
The reason I also raise this is because where, you know, the intangible example is one good example. Well, let's say you have a contract. No one disputes that exists, right? So in 9B, you have a hedge contract. But let's say now it's extremely difficult to measure it. So the question then becomes, you know, if you can't say I'm representing this faithfully because the standard deviation of the value is, you know, extremely wide, does that mean I derecognize it?
Well, it's not like there's a yes or no answer to that question.
Well, I hear you, but the way this is constructed, the principles, it could, in my mind, one could interpret it that way.
I didn't mean to jump in and take over here.
That would be a decision for the board to make in individual projects.
Well, I don't want to create a framework that could lead the board down that path, I guess is really what I'm saying. That, in my mind, would be not representation.
Are you saying that there's always you should recognize something, even though there's no number that you can faithfully represent that anybody cares about?
Yes. Yeah. No. That's the last part I wouldn't strike.
Not my opinion.
I would strike that nobody cares about. I think that if I've entered into a hedge contract or I've entered into some kind of complex arrangement, let's say I paid $1 billion for a contract 5 years ago, and today it's worth anywhere from 30 to 60% of its original value. Okay, very wide. Mm-hmm. Under this approach, I think one could argue I have a basis for derecognizing that asset.
Not because you can't faithfully represent it. You could say 30% of the original value is $1.5 billion. You could faithfully represent that as the what you think is the minimum amount you're going to receive. And people may be interested in that number. You can't faithfully represent any number as the amount you're going to receive because you don't know what it is.
But the way I read this is that because that's incorporated into the concept of relevance, I now have a basis for...
Was that what was intended?
Well, we've lifted some words which are already in the framework, which say that if, and I can't put my hands on it quickly, but it says that if there's a sufficiently wide range in the estimates, it may not be relevant to users. It doesn't say it isn't relevant, it says it may not be.
Right.
So we've picked that up here, and we've said that that will be a judgment the board will have to take in those cases, whether it is sufficiently relevant to recognise or not.
9A.
I mean, if this framework and that principle was in operation during the crisis, major banks would be taking assets off their balance sheet simply because the values had changed so much because the market had become so illiquid.
Not necessarily. At least when I was writing those words, I had in mind, I have this contract and it could be anywhere between plus 10 billion and minus 10 billion. Now that's a wide range. The number you're talking about is not a huge range.
Well, it's in the eye of the beholder, I think.
Yeah, and that's why it says the board would have to make that decision.
But Ron, whether lawsuit is a good example.
You're pretty sure it's not going to be a positive outcome. But you're right. You don't know what the negative outcome is going to be, and there might be a variety of things you could choose. You might say, well, I know it's going to be at least X, and you could represent that faithfully, and people might probably be interested in that number. You don't know what the outcome is going to be, but you can make some statements about the outcome that you can state accurately.
But should that number be recognizing statement of...
Well, that becomes your decision. And that's not... This doesn't tell you whether to or not. It just tells you that's how you make the decision.
If the scenarios are so wide, you know, some cases, you know, will be very narrow result. Others will be much wider result. What I want...
We haven't tried to, I don't think, Peter, we haven't tried to imply any specific quantification of this. Just acknowledge the possibility exists that, you know, there may not really be any information you can give anybody that's useful about something.
It's part of the way to pick up faithful representation in combination with relevance to look at paragraph 10 in 10DA. Which says, paper concludes, we should not require recognition of an asset or liability if recognition would result in information that is not relevant. And I think what I've heard from this discussion is, if there's a relevant attribute that is not possible to represent faithfully, as trying to pick up the two aspects.
There's nothing you can represent faithfully that anybody cares about.
That is relevant. So maybe expanding it from just, I think that would address Hans's concern that we are redefining relevance to always include faithful representation. So what we're saying instead of relevant is that there's not a relevant attribute for which faithful representation is possible. And maybe to make that mean something to people who didn't hear this debate, it might mean, for example, the cost of an internally generated intangible, you know, as an example.
That's basically what we had in the last draft, in fact, actually. We had one criterion which was relevance, and we had a second criterion which is it possible to find a faithful representation of some relevant measurement of the criterion. I mean, would you prefer to have that back in as a separate test?
What do we gain by leaving it out? I don't understand.
One of my concerns about the previous draft, actually, was the fact that we had two criteria there, and it seemed that we were... It kind of gave the tone that we were setting up lots of barriers to recognition. And actually, our starting point is more likely to be that we're probably more likely to recognise things than not recognise them. And it's more the exceptional cases when we're not recognising them.
Right.
And particularly when they're...
No, but I think everybody understands why we do not recognise most intangibles, right? But then when you ask people, why do we not recognise intangibles, nobody will say because they're not relevant. They will say they're impossible to measure.
The intangible itself is definitely relevant. We just don't know any number about it that we can faithfully represent.
So, I mean, we have to use words that people understand. And I think that relevance is too broad if you do not include some reference to faithful representation, which is the core of the issue here.
So am I hearing that you would like to effectively go back to the previous draft, which had a relevance criterion and a faithful representation criterion?
Yes.
Would it be not sufficient to say there's nothing that can be faithfully represented is relevant? Nothing that can be faithfully represented is relevant?
Well, I have a comment on that issue. I don't know if they are, based on your analysis, based on the paragraph 18, you cannot find any evidence that's contrary to your claim, you know. But how about in the case of constructive obligations, is it violating the neutrality of their faithful representation, but still very relevant?
Is it violating what?
I'm saying, you know, all other members are asking, and this issue is quite, contrary to our common sense for a long, long time. So the super relevance idea, but it seems to me to state this quite a challenging, maybe dramatic statement in our conceptual framework, that statement must be, accurate. So I'm saying, as other members are saying, I'm looking for another evidence that disproves your claim in paragraph 18. So I'm suggesting that the recognition of a constructive obligations it seems to me that's a violating neutrality. That means a violating representational faithfulness. But still we are recognizing constructive obligations because that's relevant.
Why you say not faithfully?
Because that's violating neutrality. We are not recognizing constructive assets. Neutrality means, based on your paragraph 14, is kind of we apply symmetrically to resources and to obligations. If we recognize constructive obligations, then we have to accept it symmetrically. We have to recognize constructive assets. But we are not, because of some prudence or some other issues. So we are not recognizing any assets symmetrically. So we are violating that neutrality qualitative characteristics, but still we are recognizing because of that information relevant. So that's why I'm suggesting one evidence why your statement in paragraph 18 might not be true. So basically, I'm suggesting, as other members, please include the faithful representation.
I'm still not quite sure I understand the point, but
fundamentally, I share during the SF meeting. By the end, if your chairman, I know the Japanese, pointed out, follow the some kind of concern related to stewardship, the prudence and reliability. And by the end, some people would prefer to have some kind of unbiased, principles. But Iguchi tried to say it, at present, there are many requirements in our standards. They're biased. On neutral basis. Mm-hmm. And what should we do?
This is one of them.
Yeah. And so let's assume we stress we must be neutral. And then the standard is not neutral. Mm. And as we discussed yesterday about the status, in the future, any times if we create any, unneutral requirement, we should give justification. And this is what he tried to say.
You're applying neutrality to the statements as a whole, not to necessarily, there's nothing in this representation of this particular item that's biased.
Right.
But having it there at all is a sort of a bias. I see what you're saying. I'm not sure that's really addressed by paragraph 18, is it, Peter?
No, I don't think so. I think it's almost a converse problem.
Yeah, it's a different, I think it's a different issue.
It's a good point.
Yeah, it's a point, all right.
Gary?
But, Peter Reinigan's also building on paragraph 18 when the last sentence says there's no need to refer to faithful representation. I can't disagree more with that. I think faithful representation, in my experience, is actually perhaps better understood than relevance. And that's my experience, you know, trying to negotiate disclosures or whatever else. People, I think, can debate what's relevant. And the different eyes will have different thoughts on it. But faithful representation, it is what it says it is, or it is what it's described as. That's less controvertible, you know, to my way of thinking. So I would be very extremely loath to take that out of the exposure draft that's coming and the final product, especially if I read paragraph 13 right, that you're also taking reliability out of it. You know, so it, if I'm, when it says the no longer appears in the conceptual framework, I presume means this version, not the one that sort of is on the street right now. That's
No. It's actually the one on the street doesn't have it in there.
Okay. Then I'll withdraw that, but. I'm still on to faith representation is, to me, is extremely important. Is, like you say, you could faith represent the cost of derivatives a dollar, or you could, might be, you're totally irrelevant. You could faithfully represent the litigation could be settled from a dollar to $100 million, and they're faithful. People understand that. And the relevance is a bit more of a subjective, arcane thing because different people have different views of what exactly is relevant. You know, for an auditor, is it's relevant because some standard says it should be disclosed, not because anyone's going to read it and react to it or react differently.
I wanted to follow up on Shungu's point. Accounting is not mathematics. It's not a pure science. It's all sorts of estimates. Is there really something wrong in acknowledging and accepting that when you are faced with measurement uncertainty that is so big that it may result in recognizing or not recognizing an asset or a liability, we apply a different threshold, maybe with a conservative bias in a way, which is detrimental to neutrality, but it's because this is what the users really want. Are the users purely neutral? Do they always want pure neutrality? I'm not sure. It seems to me that the users also have some form of bias towards a little bit of conservatism. And that if we were to apply absolutely the same criteria for assets and liabilities, maybe the users in the end would depart from that and would make their own adjustments. That's a question I ask to the users, to the board members who are more the users than I am, and it seems to me that this is not against a notion of faithful representation that we create some bias when there is uncertainty in measurements. Not to say that when you measure, when you recognize, then you should apply a bias at that time, but on the on-off switch as to whether or not to recognize, then let's accept that we have a different threshold, maybe.
Any more comments?
Okay, can I just ask Philippe a question and I want to summarise what I've heard? Philippe, are you suggesting, I mean, at the moment the way this is written, it doesn't have particular criteria, it doesn't say, there's a discussion, I guess, in 14b, brief discussion that says neutrality suggests that you apply symmetrically. Are you suggesting we should say something positively to the contrary to that?
I would ask a question. I would not formulate a strong view that we should keep that principle absolutely perfect or depart from it. I would rather ask a question. Is it really so that users want absolute neutrality?
No, but I don't think they're not going to suggest that we should have a general principle that we should have a conservative bias in our standards. That's not what I'm hearing.
It's not that we should have a constructive bias. In a way, prudence has been abused in the past by knowingly setting aside results and to report them later on. That was a prudence bias. Now we still have some prudence in a way, but in the measurement faced with uncertainties.
we may not apply exactly the same metrics. And then that may lead to recognizing in one case and not in the other case, depending on whether we are talking of an asset or a liability. That's what we do today. That's what we do. And let's accept that it is, it's been there. It hasn't created any harm, provided it is not abused by deliberately putting aside amounts that should have been recognized.
Gary?
Yeah, jump up to Peter, to paragraph 21. And it says, you don't propose to include in recognition criteria the enhancing characteristics. I would agree with you on comparability, timeliness, and understandability. I'm not certain. I'd like to hear your thinking on verifiability. Is, if an auditor can't attest to it within some bounds of materiality or something, doesn't that cause into question the reliability, and the ability to make a reasonable estimate? And also, even though I agree, certainly the other three, and depending on what you say, perhaps verifiability, I would agree, don't belong to recognition. Are they someplace else in the document? I mean, read this thing for the, you guys have read many drafts of this thing, but I don't recall them coming up anyplace else in the document. Maybe they did, and I just didn't, don't recall reading it.
There are brief discussions in some parts of the document, I think. We haven't got probably a consolidated discussion of those because really it's already in chapter 3, so I don't think we tried to pull that together in one place. But we've tried to draw conclusions in particular parts of the document where we thought it was worth going through that thought process.
Peter, just on that, it's reflecting on what we've been discussing in primary versus enhancing characteristics. Are we really saying that in the conceptual frameworks, principles for recognition, we're debating whether there should be criteria related to one or both of the primary characteristics and that the enhancing characteristics are more likely to be factored in at a standards level? Consideration of those enhancing characteristics?
They might be, I suppose, yeah.
I mean, because in some ways, we do want the conceptual framework to push us forward to, in terms of driving consistency across the standards. We also don't want to tie ourselves in knots in the abstract at the conceptual framework level. And if we've segregated the characteristics into primary and enhancing, that might be a natural cutoff.
Yeah, so 21, if we make it clear that we're not proposing to put things in the framework about it. And we could go on to say maybe the...
In the framework's recognition criteria.
I just wanted to summarise what I think I've heard from you on the recognition criteria. I think we would have two recognition criteria, which is it going to be relevant to recognise it, which we've got in the documents already, and is it possible to provide a faithful measurement that will can be faithfully represented, which is basically what we had in the previous document. And just to remind you what we have in the existing framework, we have a reliability criterion. We don't have relevance, and we don't have separate faithful representation because that's sort of part of reliability. Is that what I'm hearing from everybody?
Isn't it just the opposite? We have relevance and representational faithfulness, and we don't have reliability?
He was talking about the existing framework.
The existing framework, we have the reliability criterion.
Only.
Well,
for recognition.
For recognition.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, but, have you tried just doing with... why haven't we tried just sticking to faithful representation? Worried about creating too many stumbling blocks. Why didn't we stick to what was in the previous framework?
Well, is it Ron's point about there's a lot of non-relevant information that you can represent faithfully?
The previous framework, the problem was, in my view.
Yeah.
We had used the word reliable there to mean a different thing than we'd used it in other places in the same framework. There we meant reliable was precise, not faithfully represented in any of these other things. And so if you still want to say you need a precise number, then that's how I'd say it. I wouldn't. That wouldn't be my preference.
No, but that's not what we're saying. That's absolutely, and that's not what faithful representation.
No.
So it is just. It just means cannot possibly get anywhere close. But anyway, of course we don't deal with irrelevant stuff, do we?
No, that's why you've got to have a relevance in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we'll go with that. Yeah?
Okay. Were there any other comments on this paper? We've obviously talked mainly about recognition. There's also derecognition, of course, in this paper.
Are you going to talk about derecognition or no?
I didn't have anything I particularly wanted to ask you, so...
I have a question on the example of B. We can take offline and talk about it because I do have an issue on your conclusions on applying risk and rewards approach. And so we can take offline.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, sorry.
Oh.
sorry. Yes, on derecognition this time.
All right, go ahead, Mary.
Two things, and it's probably about questions and the invitation to comment more than, you know, what's there. Is one, should we be asking a question about the apologies if I missed it, about the risks and rewards B versus control B at the conceptual framework rather than the standards level? Because, you know, we go through a discussion of control versus risks and rewards, and I just wondered if we should have more focus or question around that, and the I think that really was the primary question. There's one thing on retained interest that I can take offline with you, but given that risks and rewards versus control has been such a major thing, do we want to embed in our conceptual framework an overall conclusion about control, or do we say maybe control has primacy, but we may consider risks and rewards sometime, or we're not deciding at all and putting it in there because it's a not insignificant point.
In two projects, we use risks and rewards as indicators of control, and that's something that I thought maybe you should ask a question about in revenue and consolidation.
But I thought this paper is more towards a revenue recognition type of control and all that stuff, so there's a discussion.
Any more comments? Okay, thank you very much.
We're done.
We're ahead of schedule. We will probably be able to take care of all the issues that we have planned for Friday tomorrow. We'll have a new schedule for tomorrow.
Yes. We think after lunch we'll run through the Friday morning session. So make sure you've got your papers ready to go after lunch, assuming that we can get through the conceptual framework in that morning block. So the days it starts with hedge accounting and then onto conceptual framework is not affected, but we just don't believe that we're going to need all the time to finish conceptual framework. So Friday morning comes to the first day.
Okay.
So will there be a Friday?
Not if we can get through everything tomorrow afternoon.
There'll still be a Friday.
We start tomorrow at 9, right. Yeah.